Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. Here we are, Scott. We have made it to episode 70.
Yeah. Imagine this. If you were actually 70 years old, you'd be only 40 years away from retirement.
You made my brain hurt already. We're only a few minutes in. Maybe it's because I haven't talked to you in so long. It's been like a month. So we were at the SharePoint conference.
That was a while ago.
And we did a whole bunch of stuff there. And then we just kind of quit talking to each other for a month. And we just released all the episodes from the conference.
Yeah. You know, life catches up with you.
Yeah. You've been traveling. I went on vacation. I just got back from vacation a couple days ago.
Yeah. You got some new toys too.
I did. I got new toys. One of them by choice and one of them out of necessity. So on vacation was both my birthday and Father's Day. So I got some money and permission from my wife to get myself an Apple Watch. So I'm now the proud owner of a Series 3 Apple Watch. It came in the mail like 15 minutes ago. So I got it on and I got it synced, but I have had no time to play with it. So we got to hurry up and record this so I can go play with my new toys. And then the other one, I got the iPhone 10. I had a 7 and it actually died on vacation. Something with the antenna, it all just went haywire. And rather than paying to fix it, I decided why not just pay for an upgrade. So I got
the
iPhone 10 yesterday. Yeah, exactly. I got the iPhone 10 yesterday, the Apple Watch today, and now I'm eating ramen noodles for the next week.
Perfect. Well, while you're eating ramen, why don't we talk about companies that do have money to blow? So did you hear Microsoft spent $7.5 billion on GitHub?
I did. I was kind of jealous they didn't want to spend $7.5 billion for intelligent, but I suppose GitHub's probably a little bigger.
It worked out pretty good for him. $7.5 billion in stock, but then with the price increase the day they announced it, it was basically free for them. Not too bad to spend $7.5 billion free dollars.
Yeah, exactly. And it's an interesting move. I know I've talked to some people. It's been really interesting to see some of the reaction from it, from developers, from different people across the gamut. So it's like there's a whole bunch of different reactions. There's the whole open source Google community that was using GitHub that obviously is a little nervous about it. There's all the people within Microsoft and Microsoft themselves and their massive use of GitHub are all really excited about it. So it's like two polar opposite reactions.
Yeah. Definitely opposite ends of the spectrum. And that's because Microsoft treats different acquisitions in different ways. So it can be a little bit scary. It could end up being like Minecraft and just be, hey, off on its own. I mean, how many people actually think about that Microsoft owns Minecraft? It probably doesn't come up too much. You're like, oh, I just like to play Minecraft. Yeah. It doesn't pop up and say, here's Microsoft Minecraft with Bing ads and all the other things that come along with it. Even LinkedIn, to a certain degree, it's still been left alone and off on its own from the outside. They've started to use that data in other products, but LinkedIn as a service, hey, it's off on the side and does its own thing. There are others that have not gone that well. So, Skype would be a big one. Anybody remember that company called Nokia? They were out there for a while. They used to be a thing. So there's some weird stuff.
Yeah. Even Wunderlist. Like Wunderlist just kind of got blown up.
Well, it's still there. Kind of.
Sort of. It's converting to To-Do. There was, the Outlook app that used to be, was it Acompli?
Mm-hmm.
Was the old Outlook app. So yeah, it'll be interesting. It sounds like, at least based on the initial feedback, that GitHub, by and large, is just going to be left alone. Hopefully similar to, like you said, LinkedIn and just completely blanked. Yeah.
Nice job.
Thanks. More coffee. Minecraft. See, my kids aren't old enough to play it yet, so I haven't gotten into the whole Minecraft thing. But yeah, hopefully GitHub will be like that. One interesting thing was the day they announced it, a whole bunch of devs, it appeared, like abandoned ship on GitHub and went over to GitLab just based on the number of imports that GitLab had that day. And you brought up an interesting point there that I didn't even realize, that GitLab is actually hosted on Azure. So they're still sitting on Microsoft owned stuff.
Consumption is consumption. It doesn't matter where it comes from, right? So GitHub, the product is, you know, like I said, if they leave it alone, it's awesome and it's great. And Microsoft, to a certain degree, really needs GitHub, the product. They host a lot of their own source code within repositories in GitHub. So even things like Windows and the core of Windows are run out of source code repositories inside GitHub, which is a really big deal. So for them to own their future and kind of go forward with it, it makes sense. There's a lot of open source and developer love in there. And yeah, they just need to be, they need to be good stewards and drive that one forward. So hopefully they can do that. They've gone through and already selected new CEO for the organization. So that's going to be Nat Friedman. And he's got a really good background and should be able to steer that ship really well. He knows a little bit about Microsoft and a little bit about the outside world, which is good to bring that context and kind of have it all run together.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it'll be good. I don't see Microsoft taking it over too much. They kind of have their, some people have asked too about Visual Studio Team Services. And I guess I see them kind of leaving that more for the enterprise-y, the internal whole build process where you're doing a bunch of compiled code and GitHub, maybe a lot of the more open source stuff. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see too how those two continue to play together and evolve over time.
Yeah, well, if you think about what VSTS is, where I think a lot of people from the outside might view it as, like you just kind of mentioned, a source code repository and a place to store and maybe do some continuous integration, continuous development pipelines, things like that. It's a lot more than that, and it's a lot richer. So, you know, to me, VSTS has a whole compute engine that's sitting behind it. So where GitHub might be able to store my code, I can't do things like load testing inside of GitHub. I still need to go out to an external service and tie that through. Or even if I want to do CI/CD, it needs to live outside the GitHub service. And what does that look like? So Microsoft with VSTS has this awesome automation service with a bunch of compute that's sitting behind it that can just do things that I tell it to do. So for developer automation, it still fills a really cool niche. And realistically, now you can go ahead and have probably better first-party support for Git repos, because VSTS has had Git repos, but hey, GitHub actually makes the technology and the underlying APIs and things. So maybe it makes more sense to have that stuff live over there. And now it's a Microsoft service. And oh, by the way, we've got this really rich pipeline that lives outside and talks to everything under the sun on the outside, which is really cool.
Yeah. The other, and this was the other thing I heard, is it may have even been somewhat of an acquisition of Microsoft not wanting GitHub to fall into other people's hands. I know I haven't seen anything if like Google was going to try to buy them or somebody else, but Microsoft is actually the biggest or the most active organization on GitHub. I didn't realize this. Over the last few years, they have more than 2 million commits and updates to different projects across GitHub. So I can even see just from a pure standpoint of, hey, we don't want Google owning the source code repository where we have so much of our source code. Let's just buy it because we have 7.5 billion that we can spend on it. Like you said, it came out to essentially free anyways.
Yeah. No, like I said, it all works out. I think this one will work out for the best, and I'm hopeful that it does work out that way.
Yeah. So there was also another massive acquisition. I'm going to exaggerate, massive acquisition here right at the end of the SharePoint conference. So this one was a little bit closer to us and maybe to our audience, was LiveTiles actually. I don't know, has the purchase actually gone through? I know I was listening to the other guy's podcast and it was like, they hadn't actually closed on it, but LiveTiles is going to buy or has already purchased Hyperfish.
That they are. And that's about all I have to say about that.
It'll be interesting. Again, we've known CJ, AC, those guys do the podcast. CJ was one of the co-founders. So that one, again, it sounds like at least for the time being, LiveTiles is going to leave Hyperfish alone, operate as a separate product. They've got a whole bunch of roadmappy things. I'm sure this one will evolve over time too, but that was another recent acquisition kind of in that SharePoint Office 365 space.
So enough about acquisitions. Let's change gears a little bit and talk about some of the other things that have been going on in the world. So there's been some real niceties that have come along for administrators and IT pros in Office 365 land lately. And one of those, and I'm sure you've been playing around with this one too a little bit in day-to-day, is the new admin center. And having the unified Microsoft 365 admin center coming into play. So the new admin.microsoft.com.
Yeah, I have. And this one is interesting. I've been playing with it, but for me, it actually doesn't change my admin center a whole lot because I don't have Microsoft 365. It adds a few things in there, but for the administrators, from that standpoint, having all of this stuff pulled under a single admin center is really nice. And I can't even see what would have normally been under my Office one, because mine's already switched to admin.microsoft.com.
Yeah, so it subsumes all that functionality, brings it over, you get the same, well, heck, you get the same navigation and everything else, but you do get the additive features for M365 where they start to make sense for you, especially for, oh, you think about like admin center updates or new functionality coming downstream, maybe features are changing, billing's changing. Now there's just one centralized place to go and get it at all.
Yeah. So, and as they roll this out, users will maybe start to see it, maybe they won't even notice, but as you start going to Office 365, going to your Office 365 environment and clicking on admin, it'll start automatically redirecting you to admin.microsoft.com. And that's just going to be that, like we said, that whole central admin spot for all things 365, for Office 365, for Microsoft 365, for EMS. I think I see a few new admin centers that are showing up in mine. Some of the things like Azure ATP, or I think even maybe Cloud App Security is new in there. Because it does. It starts pulling EMS admin, Office 365 admin, and Microsoft 365 admin all into just one admin center. So you're not going a bunch of different places. Just remember admin.microsoft.com, all things 365 admin.
Yeah, and the nice thing about that too is now we're starting to get unified look and feel across the suite. So things like the new Teams and Skype for Business Admin Center, they carry over that same modern UI or design language. So hopefully things are a little bit easier to navigate these days and get around and easier for customers to find their information, interact with it, and configure it.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's a good change.
So kind of keep going with that admin theme. They have a new role available as well to Office 365 accounts or those Azure AD accounts and the roles that are associated with them. So we've had things in the past like, hey, maybe you wanted somebody to go in and be like a reports reader and not a global admin or a service admin, things like that. Now they have a new message center reader role. So now you can actually have change management folks or whoever is responsible for monitoring just that component of change with Office 365 in your organization. You can grant them the ability to get into the admin center and view all the posts in the message center. And then be able to share those posts with other people, just like your admins have been able to do.
Yeah, I like this one too. Again, we've talked about it before. I continue to talk about it with clients is you really need to have somebody that is over your entire environment, that kind of oversees that entire Office 365 environment and frankly, keeping up on some of the changes can almost be a full-time job. So giving people that ability to go in and see all of these messages, even just keeping up to date on it, like you said, change management people, maybe even just different admins, maybe your whole IT department, you just want them to be aware of some of these messages that are popping up in the message center. Again, it could be related to new features. It could be related to outages, to updates that are applied. Being able to allow users to only go in and read these messages can really help make sure people stay educated about what's going on, what's changing, what issues there may be within your Office 365 tenant.
Yeah, very, very important to have. And hopefully you can get somebody to do it, like you said.
So another new one, they made some changes to licensing for mobile apps. So previously, mobile applications, Word, PowerPoint, Excel, OneNote for iOS and Android. Notice there was no mention of Windows Phone in there. I just had to throw that out there. I'm sorry if you guys own a Windows phone yet. It's just iOS and Android. Does anybody use a Windows phone? I've met a couple people. Anyways, I'm getting off topic.
Yeah, don't get stuck on it. Don't ruminate.
Yeah. I'm reminiscing on the past. You brought it all up with the Nokia acquisition. Those mobile apps are now going to be made available to users who have Office 365 Business Essentials, F1, E1, and A1. So if you pay attention to those SKUs, those four SKUs specifically do not include desktop Office users. So those licenses in the past have been online services only, and then access to, obviously, the Office web apps. But now you're not going to get desktop licenses, but you will get those licenses for your mobile apps on your mobile devices. And the mobile app licensing has always been a little bit goofy, where you can download them, you can use them for free, but registering with your Office 365 accounts unlocks additional features around editing and even some of the advanced features that maybe weren't available if you didn't register with an Office 365 account. So they're making this available to everybody on their mobile devices, which I think is good. More and more people are using mobile devices. If you want to do any heavy duty editing, you still really have to use the desktop apps, in my opinion. But it's interesting to see them expand that mobile license to some of those lower tiers now for Office 365 plans.
Well, that's probably going to have to drive customers in some different ways too, because now your data can get out to a bunch of different places. So do you think about potentially upgrading some of those service plans to pick up Intune features like we've talked about in the past, like mobile application management or some type of device management?
Yeah, definitely something to think about.
You're going to get more free stuff, but you might end up paying for it in the long run.
Oh, marketing at its finest. What other news? What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. There was some new Adobe stuff.
There was. That one was cool. I went and enabled this morning. I haven't played with it yet, but Adobe and Microsoft have been working together in a lot of new features and integrating it in. I know already, like in Adobe Reader, you can actually add SharePoint sites to Adobe Reader. This one actually extends some of your Office 365 services. So Adobe has what they are calling, I lost my notes here.
Document Cloud?
Yes. So they've had the Document Cloud, but now they essentially have an add-in enterprise app to integrate the Adobe Document Cloud even more with Office 365. So you can go out to the Adobe site, and we'll include links in the show notes. And if you have the Adobe Creative Cloud, you can go to their website, click a few links, log into your Office 365 tenant, and it adds an enterprise app to Azure AD, which then in SharePoint Online and OneDrive surfaces some new Adobe features. So the first thing I actually noticed was all my Adobe icons changed in Office 365, or all the PDF file icons changed to kind of more of the Adobe-ish logo. And then you get some additional features up in the, I can't remember what it's called. Is it the action bar? It's the little bar in your document libraries.
The ribbon. That's not a ribbon.
The ribbon. Well, it's not really the ribbon. It's ribbon-esque. Ribbon-ish?
Well, I'm reading Microsoft's official blog post, and it says PDF services are now available in the ribbon. So let's go with that.
Okay. So that is, we'll go with the ribbon. I always think of the ribbon in Office. So this is not, don't think the Office ribbon, think the SharePoint Online ribbon, where you have things like download, delete, move to, copy to, all of that. Now you have some additional Adobe features in there that let you do things like create a PDF by Adobe. So it adds the whole by Adobe in there. It actually uses the Adobe Document Cloud. You can combine files by Adobe. If you have like a Word document selected, you can actually then just convert to PDF on that Word document right within Adobe. And for PDF files, you now have that option to do things like organize pages, combine files, export those PDFs to like a Word document. So if you want to do that reverse conversion from PDF to Word, that option is in there. Or you just want to open it in Adobe Document Cloud. So PDF files now, you have that option to open and then open in your browser or open it in the Adobe Document Cloud. So this whole integration, again, it's free. There's nothing extra you have to pay for if you already have the Adobe Document Cloud, but it just ties that into Office 365 and gives you a lot more functionality and power when you're working with Adobe documents or converting Office documents to PDF files.
Yeah. So a couple of things to unpack there, right? Free if you already have Adobe Document Cloud,
yes,
and you're already to go. So you do have to pay for that and get that stuff going. There is a deployment that needs to go on to make this happen. So like you mentioned, there's an enterprise app that gets deployed into Azure AD and ties all this functionality together and pushes it all downstream and makes it all hunky-dory and integrated in. So if you're an end user and you hear about this and you're like, hey, it'd be great if we had it in our tenancy, go buy your favorite admin a donut and have that conversation with them and see if it makes sense to go ahead and deploy it out there. One of the other really interesting things, and I was a little bit confused when I first heard about this, when I was like, well, huh. So things like Word already, they can already, and PowerPoint and everything else, I can already export to PDF and do all that stuff there. But you can only do it from the online version or from the desktop version. So now you can do it from online and theoretically with better fidelity because we're just driving through Adobe's native services now. So based on that kind of strategic partnership that they had with Microsoft, hopefully they know how to convert their stuff into their own format better than Microsoft does. Hopefully.
Yes, hopefully. I would hope so. I always have had better luck using Adobe stuff.
Yep, you just gotta pay for it. But once you pay for it, life's good. You're all out there.
I already had it. I already paid for it. So it was a no-brainer to go enable it.
So speaking of the ribbon, there were some updates that were announced there as well for both, well, online versions, Office Online and Office on the desktop. So exclusive to just those features. So like Office 365 Click to Run and Office Online. But you're going to see some updates to the user experience there. So there's kind of three big changes that are coming downstream. There's a new ribbon that's coming into place, which is simplified. I don't know if anybody's ever messed around with the ribbon in an Office app over time, but they have not changed much since like 2003. They just get more buttons. They never get less in there. You're going to get things like new colors and icons, which hopefully make it a little bit easier to figure out where some of that information is. And then also search is kind of becoming a first party experience within all the applications, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, it is. And they have some screenshots here. I haven't seen this surface in any of my Office apps yet. I did install the Office 2019, they're calling it, it's essentially the beta. It's the Office 2019 commercial preview. And I haven't seen any of this in here. The article makes it sound like
this isn't going to be in commercial. This is only going to be an Office 365 and Office.com experiences.
And only the... So it looks like based on this, it's the browser that's going to start in Word Online. But it does say that you're going to start seeing like the simplified version in Outlook for Windows, which I think is still that commercial 365 because the...
Well, there's a difference. There's a difference between MSI or boxed install and click to run. So that's where they're making the distinction is if you're in a click to run installer and you're basically evergreen and always up to date, you'll get this experience over there. Commercial is still going to drive on a different schedule, which is why they can release things like commercial today for the 2019 preview and have it ready to go because once it's baked, it's baked. It's just going to sit out there and get its, you know, monthly security update and all that good stuff.
And I'm a little goofy too, because the Macs, there's not that quite that differentiation yet that they have on Windows.
Give them time. They'll get there if they can.
They're getting there, but for me, it doesn't really change anything. But yeah, it'll be interesting. It looks like it's going to come to Word Online first. So start with a lot of the online apps and then slowly work its way down into desktop apps.
So you can think of this as kind of a little bit of a makeover or a new coat of paint at the end of the day. But it should go quite a ways towards, if you think about being able to like onboard some of those users in kiosk roles that you mentioned, like, hey, like F1 accounts are going to be able to use mobile apps now. So hopefully this experience kind of just trickles down all the way across the board. And the less time that you have to spend training your resources, particularly those that aren't like Office experts on Office, really the better off you're going to be.
Yes. Most definitely.
If you think about like design goals and things like that, there's functionality that's going to be universal to everybody. So Outlook, right? Everybody's going to use reply all, maybe things like forward, mark as read, mark as unread. But there's a ton of commands in there like schedule an email, which Probably don't need to be in the ribbon. You can just search for that when you want to be able to go ahead and pull it off. So that's what's driving a lot of that simplification is let's take the top, 80 to 90%, whatever it happens to be of commands based on telemetry that you see users using all the time. That's the stuff that sticks. Anything else? Just throw it in the back behind search or in some type of other configuration item.
So another one, this one was another one near and dear to my heart is PowerShell. So there is a new module that is out there that has been released for working with Power Apps in Flow with PowerShell. So this has a bunch of commandlets for essentially managing your Power Apps in your Flow environment. So commandlets like getting your environment, reading, update, and deleting Canvas apps, Canvas app permissions, working with connections with permissions, approvals, connectors, your environments. So getting and removing environments, a whole bunch of them. I'm not even going to try to go through them. I haven't had a chance to play with all of them yet. But I was surprised at the number of commandlets that were available initially when they announced this. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. I would go out and play with it, especially if you're doing a lot with Power Apps and Flow in your environment to help manage them.
Yeah. So this one, I don't know if you paid attention to when they did the announcement, but the slug for that URL, like the article is just PowerShell commandlets for Power Apps and Flow, but in the slug, it's GDPR.
So I did see
that. So why do we have to do this? Oh, we have to do this because we have to give organizations more control of their users' data to be able to respond to these DSRs and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, this one is, if you do want to play with it, it's a separate download. So it's not something that's available in the PowerShell gallery. You've actually got to go out, grab the PowerShell modules, like the PSD1 files, pull all those out into their own folder. You're going to have to do things like potentially go ahead and unblock the files because, hey, they were just downloaded as part of a zip to go ahead and run them through, which means changing execution policies and some other things. So it might not work on all of your servers, depending on what's going on and where you want to run on this. And I don't know if you had a chance. I loaded it up real quick and was kind of playing around with it just to see what commandlets were available in there. And they did an absolutely atrocious job with doing the verbs and nouns in here. So they've got very generic things like get app, remove app, publish app. Well, what kind of app? Because apps are apps, and there's like a million kinds of apps. And if you're running this from a Windows box, which you're going to be, is that like an app in the store? Is that a Power App app? Is it a Flow app? Is it a who's a watch it widget? Like, you just don't know. And they just did an absolutely like abysmal job. Like connection, get connection and remove connection.
Yeah. I just saw that one. Get connection and remove connection.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like you guys are just, I don't know. Somebody was not thinking when they did that. And you can clearly tell that it was designed by like the service team that never touches anything else and has never had to interact with another service in their entire life.
How about get admin environment?
Sure. Absolutely. I love my admin environments.
Yeah. I love my admin environments too. I wonder which one it'll get. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. One interesting thing to note here is it does say in this announcement that if you want to perform the admin operations in the admin commandlets, you do need a paid Power Apps Plan 2 license or a Power Apps Plan 2 trial license. It doesn't look like this is supported with all Power App plans, which, again, I haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but that's also a kind of interesting requirement in there. We'll have to play with it. Maybe we'll have to do a whole show just on the Power App commandlets.
More admin functionality gated behind a license. Just what customers love to see.
Yeah. All right. So I have one more. I just wanted to mention, I know Valdek kind of reached out to us about a admin survey he has out there. We've had him on the show once, talked about the Office 365 CLI he's building. As he builds that, he put a survey out there for SharePoint admins, just asking for, hey, a few minutes, I think 5 minutes or so, to go fill out the survey to help him learn more about how you spend your time managing your environment, what tools you use, essentially to help. I think I haven't taken the survey yet because I was on vacation, but I think the gist of it, his goal here is just to help as they build out that Office 365 CLI of how to build it out, what to put in there, how people leverage different tools for admin work. So we can put the link to that in the show notes too. So just a quick shout out for him. If you get a chance, go help them out, fill out that admin survey.
Yeah, so we'll have links to everything we talked about in the show notes. Those will be at mscloud itpropodcast.com/episode70, where you can just pull them down in your podcatcher of choice.
Or if you want them in your email, go sign up for a newsletter. About the only emails we send out are show notes. And then occasionally when we do things at the SharePoint conference or have some extra stuff, an email around that. But we really try not to spam you. So that's another way you can get the show notes.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Well, thank you, Scott. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you later.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.